ladies and gentlemen. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I should have stayed retired, but people want me to talk about megafires and give my perspective. And the first question is, what are they, megawatts? Well, intensity is one part of it, but nothing really special. There are some instances of high intensity. Are there mega numbers? And this is what I really want to focus on, is that the numbers of ignitions have been decreasing since 1788. And the large areas of individual fires is increasing. So in this talk, I want to go through a little bit of history and a little bit of science about the processes of combustion, because it was politics that got us into this problem, and politics should get us out of it. But they need a bit of reminding about a little bit of the science along the way. Fire have been around ever since the eucalypts occurred, and the Aboriginal presence was the first. Recognition of megafires. The Aborigines recognised, I'm sure, that if large areas were continuously burnt, that threatened their livelihood in no uncertain manner. And just about everywhere in the historical record where Aboriginal burning has ceased, the area and intensity of large fires has increased. This photo, and it comes up okay, is out of the Western Desert in 1953 on the track of the Woomera rockets. It was aerial photography shot at that time, and about the only evidence we have of the patch burning of the desert Aborigines. You can see in many places there were lines of fires lit. They lit on lines and they lit at minimum burning conditions. Most of those fires are no more than 2 kilometres in length, and in the sort of conditions that they would burn, that would be about between 20 and 30 minutes of burning spin effects. The desert Aborigines left around about 1965, was the last people to exit, and their practice went with them. And in 1974-75, we had the megafires, crudely mapped by Luke and MacArthur, but very extensive, and that was accompanied by loss of species, loss of small faunal species through the desert. Mapping is a little more accurate, but there are still huge fires occurring out in the desert areas, and by comparison, the 2003 fires are around about 3 million hectares down in the bottom right-hand corner. In 1939, the megafires that were largely attributed to burning off. But there is a curious look that if you look down at Gippsland, east of Orbost, that pattern can only occur under the drought conditions that persisted in 1939 if there had been extensive burning off in that area in the years just before it. So that was one of the few areas where graziers burning was still practiced at that time in a frequency that would stop the megafires developing. In 1982-83, which was probably about the peak of total fire suppression efficiency in Victoria in my book, we have that superimposed on the 1939 pattern, and the one area in Gippsland where fairly large fires didn't quite make the mega class occurred was in East Gippsland, and associated there with the withdrawal of the grazial burning and the increasing in fuel loads. To 2003, very extensive and continuous burns, and that's a feature of the megafire which I'll come back to later. Now, any fire burning during prolonged drought under extreme weather and in burning heavy fuel will have these characteristics. Megafires are nothing special. The duration of the tall flames is determined by the fuel fineness and the distribution of the fuel. The heat damage is determined by the total fuel consumption. So if you are carrying heavy fuels, then you will get high heat damage. And it doesn't have to be high intensity because those two are not necessarily related. 60 to 70% of the area will be burnt at high intensity, and most importantly, from a conservation point of view, that there are practically no unburned areas within that area of fire. This is not a mega fire, it's a fire burning at about a kilometre an hour, and the tall flames determined by the structure of the fuel, and mostly you look at these walking backwards, so it tends to stay the same. Let's have a look at inside. Can we have my next MPEG, please? This is a fire travelling at about the same rate, about a kilometre an hour. It's burning from behind the camera. The camera's looking downwind, and it's a segment that I want you to look at one of the twigs in the foreground and get in your mind the period of the tall flames as they surround the camera. Firstly, you have the embers coming in advance. The wind is being blocked downwind of the front, and these are sometimes drawn back, and this happens in megafires on a larger scale, but it's the same process. If you were counting, that was probably about 10 seconds. The tall flames have now moved off, and you have burning behind the tall flames the bulk of the fuel bed. We know from the time of combustion what size material is burning, and now in a heavy fuel bed, the fuel is burning from the top and burning downwards. And it's this process which can go on for some time. Continuous flaming in this fuel, which was about 17 to 20 tonnes per hectare of fine fuel, was around about a minute. But the smouldering combustion following that, that'll do, thanks, we'll go on to the slides. The process, you could not walk onto that area for another 45 minutes because of the heating of the ground, the combustion of the large logs, and so in any fire, including megafires, it is the 2.5 millimetre fuels that causes the tall flames, and larger material burns out at longer periods. So when you get an infrared image such as this, which is purport to be a fireball on the Victorian's website, in fact, that big red streak is an indication of a high rate of spread, hot gases and hot ground behind the flames. Now we've had that. Can we? The one thing that does happen in megafires is because they're so large that some part of them will be exposed to a high wind speeds and extreme conditions. This was the 17th of January, which was setting up the fires which burnt into Canberra on the 18th. And if we have a look at the 18th, we find that the high wind period on this particular day was confined to a relatively narrow strip of about 30 kilometres north-south in the Canberra area, which is that big convection column at the top. Elsewhere on these fires, the conditions were nowhere near as extreme. So the bigger the fire you have, the more likelihood that somewhere on it is going to give you extreme behaviour. But the most important thing for us to consider, and it has been known for a long time for people dealing with fires, that when we get these fires burning under drought conditions in heavy fuels, everything burns. There are no refuges for fauna. This is a massive uniform treatment. And although we get variation in the heat stress on the canopy, which is what this photo shows up, there are only very few white patches, and they're either water or they're unburnt grassland in the Omeo area. Let us now contrast to the West Australian megafire situation. Now, the West Australians use mega numbers of fires to create their burnt patch burning through their forests in the southwest. This is 2004-05. Perhaps 500,000 ignitions. That may not be mega, but when you add together 5 years of it, then you certainly do have a mega number of ignitions. And what's particularly important in comparison to the previous slides that we had is that within those red areas, there are scattered all the way through at least 30% of unburnt area. So here we have a variation in fire created by massive ignitions in a similar way to the Aborigines did in the desert. So the problem is that we've had these big fires in the future, and we need really a new imperative to face up to it. Mostly in Australia, we're not like the Aborigines and dependent on fire protection for our livelihood, although there are a few people in the country, which we often forget about, are in that position. The environment people in several states have abrogated their responsibility to suppress and manage fires on their estate and have handed it over to emergency services, which have taken it with open arms. And in my book, that has failed here, as it has failed in the biggest and most powerful country in the world that Jerry told us about. So we are always going to have to burn large areas. Now, our choice is whether we burn them with multiple fires at low intensity at a time of our choosing, or whether we are subjected to the whims of climate and the weather and we get burnt at high intensity. Kevin asked me for a few thoughts about research, and my biggest concern is that another megafire event is going to pass without us properly finding out what the degrees of damage. Earlier this year, some learned gentlemen wrote to The Age and said there is no scientific evidence that there were losses of fauna in the 2003 fires. I mean, how can anybody comprehend such bullshit? But it seems that it's part of the CRC to actually go and measure this. I think we need to research the application of fire even further, and we have to perhaps focus our mega ignitions closer to minimal burning conditions than we have already. That'll be difficult, and it will require the taking of the problem by the land management agencies themselves. Thank you.